Hey, everybody. Hi, I'm Zora. You probably know that if you listen to this podcast. Anyway, we recorded this episode a while back, and the reason it's taken so long to come out is because we had a number of audio issues. We managed to preserve the podcast, but you may notice that Maddie's audio is rough. We had to use an OBS backup. I tried to do my best, but heads up that it's going to be a little crispy. That said, I think the show is really good. Well, I think the show is great. But this episode in particular is a fun one, and I hope you enjoy meeting Maddie and Zainab, who are our new contributors or new hosts to the podcast. Are they hosts? They speak in the episode. I don't know what a host is, but they're great. I'm bummed that Maddie didn't get a better auditory introduction, but I'm excited for you to hear her talk about what she's been playing. All right. Thanks, everyone. Apologies for the funky audio, and enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of Post Game, a SideQuest Patreon podcast all about hot takes on cold games. I am Melissa. I am SideQuest editor-in-chief. I use she, her pronouns.
I'm Zora. I am SideQuest's, copy ogre and assistant editor, and I use they, them pronouns. We had a whole conversation about intros, and I did mine twice, and it's all out of the tank. There's no more.
there's only so many intros you could do at a time. Nassim unfortunately can't be with us today, but we bring to you two fresh new editors, not to replace, well, I guess kind of to replace Nassim, but not just today. Anyway, why did I do that? I confused everybody and myself. Why am I like this? So I would like to introduce to you Zainab and Maddie. Zainab, do you want to give us a little intro?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Zainab. My pronouns are they, them, there, and I'm one of SideQuest's new editors, and I'm excited to chat a lot of shit on the podcast. I hope I'm allowed to swear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. I would be fired.
I'm trying to imagine how, if I could, like, what would me firing somebody even like? I'm not cut out for that.
A lot of gentle reminders.
Friendly reminder, you're not welcome here anymore. Maddie, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Maddie Butler. I use she, her pronouns, and I am SideQuest's weightlifting editor, as we just discussed a few minutes ago.
Brand new position. We are, I mean, shit, man.
Position.
If you want to send us weightlifting articles, yeah.
Oh, I could do that.
Let's do it.
I have just written us a weightlifting article, sort of.
It's true. Cool.
But it's not a commentary on scope. It's simply a descriptor of the person.
We are very, very excited to have two new people join our editorial team. Both Zainab and Maddie have been with us for a very long time. And I'm really glad and grateful that you guys have joined our editorial team. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We secretly have talked about both of you on this podcast. Slandering your names, naturally.
I listen to the podcast sometimes, although I'm very bad at listening.
Oh, hell yeah. No, we've definitely talked about Maddie in the context of, oh my god,
Nancy
Girl
Drew.
Who solves crimes. There we go. The crime girl. And Zainab in the context of specifically, I think the Okami piece has come up a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
Because it's a very good one. Yeah. Here we are. We're going to do a podcast.
We are. What better way to introduce our new editors than to talk about what we've been playing? Is it because I've only played one game for the past like 4 months? No, of course not. And I just really needed to talk about it with somebody else who's played it? No, that's not the reason. It's because it's a good way to introduce people. So today we're talking about what we've been playing recently. Who does anybody like champing at the bit to go first?
I chomping? Can if you want, so we can model behavior.
Yes, model that behavior, Zora.
Great. So I've been playing Nier, which Nier, both of them. So I finished Nier Automata, which I think is how that's pronounced.
I was waiting to hear it pronounced. I've been like, is it automata? Is it automata?
I think it's automata, which is, and it's what I'm going to go with because it's the one that popped out of my mouth. Yeah, so I've been playing Nier Automata, or I finished Nier Automata. Finally, it's been 3 years, literally 3 years ago, 2018. in like July or something of 2018. Hang on. Sorry. I'm just realizing. No, I'm realizing how many things happened in my life in the summer of 2017. And I'm like having a bit of a moment. I just have to like ride the shockwave. Okay. So in July or in the summer of 2017, my roommate got Nier Automata and we both played it. And I played all the way through to literally 2 hours from the end. Literally 2 hours from the end. I did not know that it was 2 hours from the end at the time, but it was. And then I didn't touch it for 3 years. And now I played through the whole game again and actually finished it. And it was incredible. And the reason that I actually finally finished it is because we bought Nier Replicant and I really wanted to play Nier Replicant. So now I'm doing that. It's been a while.
Is that the one where he is a child or an old man?
I looked this up. I finally looked this up. Nier Replicant was originally came out in like the early 2010s or something in Japan and in North America. And in North America, I think it came out as Nier Gestalt, in which you play old man Nier, who is trying to save his daughter.
I'm so sorry. I have been so like part of the reason that I can't remember his name in my head. I know it's not Geralt from The Witcher, but it's also Geralt from The Witcher. They're the same person to me. And now when you say Nier, was it Gestalt?
Gestalt. It's the German concept.
When you say that, now I'm like, oh, okay, so there's two reasons why I keep thinking his name is Geralt.
I'm sorry, it's pronounced Gestalt. And it means an organized whole that is perceived as more than the sum of its parts. I love the Nier games. They're pretentious as hell.
Huge same.
Yeah, so it was originally published in... You know how games used to do the thing where there was like... I mean, Pokemon's the obvious example. Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue. But Mega Man started doing it at one point. Mega Man Battle Network, excuse me. Started doing it at one point where it was like the one where you fought the bird and the one where you fought something else, but I didn't have that one, so I fought the bird. Okay. It was like Mega Man Battle Network 6. Anyway, so they did that. So it was published as Nier Gestalt in North America, and you played a dad. And then in Japan and possibly other regions, it was published as Nier Replicant, and you played a teen and his sister, who was trying to save his sister.
Okay.
And they remade the one where you play the teen, which has been a source of strife for me. I think that this relationship would be a little less creepy if it was a dad.
Okay.
I prefer the dad.
Yeah.
Having played both versions.
Okay. So let me set up Nier Replicant. And Maddie, you can feel free to chime in because it's not a secret. It's widely known that Maddie loves Nier.
Poorly, poorly kept secret.
So Nier Replicant is about and I've only played part one, which means I am very well equipped to give this description because I don't actually know the secret story that you learn when you play through the whole game. So in part one of Nier Replicant, you play a teen boy named, well, nothing. He's supposed to be an unnamed protagonist, but literally everybody on the internet calls him Nier.
Geralt.
You play Geralt, a white-haired anime boy. So you play Nier, who is a teen. I would have sworn up and down that he was 15, but I think he's older than that, based on how he looks after a 5-year time skip. And he's He lives in a village run by two twins, Devola and Popola. Golly, who could they be? They're not an automata. They are absolutely an automata. So I know some things about this world already. And he, it opens on him trying to find a cure for his, the main thrust of the game opens on him trying to find a cure for his sister, who has some strange disease called the Black Scrawl. It is terminal. There is no known cure. They also appear to be living in this post-apocalyptic setting that's, I guess it's not feudal at all. There's not, to my knowledge, lords. It's just sort of classically, democratically, governed towns. I haven't thought very hard about the government of the post-apocalypse possible robot future.
Well, I can't believe that you would overlook something like that.
I know. I actually can't believe that I would overlook something. But it's basically just him running around trying to find a way to cure his sister. And he's doing it in the company of the just shittiest fucking book I've ever met in my life.
I love the book. I've only watched Maddie stream it.
You haven't heard the book talk about Kaine.
Good. I'm sure I haven't.
That book's a fucking sexist piece of shit.
He is, yeah. If he was a person, he'd be yelling, "Get off my lawn." Like, constantly.
He genuinely would.
Such a mean book.
He's so shitty. But it's near, right? And so there's this sense of melancholy in the world building. The music is beautiful. It's sort of an action adventure JRPG, which means it's real-time battles. The movement's really nice. Nier Automata feels very much like an exaggeration of Nier Replicant in terms of the play. Every motion in Nier Automata is much bigger. Everything reaches farther. You know, you go faster. It's meant to be, the flow is really emphasized. But I get the sense that Nier Replicant is trying to portray slightly more like human movement, as in movement that's more potentially possible for human people. So you can only jump so high, you fall like a fucking rock. The sword swings don't inexplicably travel farther than the swing, that kind of thing. But it's still very, very fun to play. And I'm looking forward to learning how truly fucked up the world is. I've got some suspicions. You learn some stuff in Automata.
It's interesting, having played both the PS3 version and the, like, the remastered, well, I guess it's not a remaster, it's a version upgrade, whatever they're
version 1.0.
Version 1.33, something 1 million numbers that I cannot possibly memorize. But it's funny because in the PS3 version, Papa Nier jumps with his, like, he jumps, like, chest first.
Oh my god.
It's very, like, he, like, slides all over the place when he runs. Like, it's really wild, because when I played the upgraded version, I was like, oh, this really mirrors the movement in Automata. Sorry, I pronounce it Automata.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. You're probably correct. So anyways, if I stumble, that's why. But in Automata, everything's, like you said, so fluid. Like, you can tell that they're, you know, not human. There's like a sort of super strength or whatever to their movements. And I think in like the remaster, everything is like very fluid, like Automata, but there's definitely like a, oh, like I'm controlling a human here as opposed to a superpower.
Yeah. And for Replicant version, hold on, 1.22474487139...
I love video games.
I very much get the sense that I'm controlling not just a human, but a teen human.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that in the play, and also in how he's animated, how he hits the ground, how he, like, picks himself up and starts running. There's, like, a Naruto run moment every time he jumps. It's great. And that kind of thing. Kaine straight up does the Naruto run. Like, she just 100%.
With her, like, cleaver thing.
Wild, yeah.
Zora, I have to reveal this that has nothing to do with anything. Oh? But now every time I see something relating to Naruto, I think
of you. Oh my god! I saw
Naruto candy at the mall yesterday. Okay. And like there was a moment where I was like, I should take a picture of it and send it to Zora. And I was like,
Jesus Christ.
I don't need to do that. I don't actually know Zora's personal investment in Naruto, but now there is a
I've watched up to the tournament arc 5 times. Or the Chunin
exams.
I've never
seen Naruto.
I'm sorry. It's the Chunin exams. Excuse me for my slander. And I've never seen anything farther than that. I read as far as Sakura getting really, really fucking cool in this time after the time skip, and then I stopped reading, which I've been widely told was the right choice.
For context, for those who were not present at the time that Maddie was streaming near, I believe.
So mad.
And Zora said Zora said that they saw a Naruto soccer game.
So mad.
And I was like, whoa, I can't believe that exists. And it turns out it was not a Naruto soccer game. And for some reason, this was so funny to me. Zora has become, or Naruto has become inextricable from Zora in my mind.
It was called Naruto Strikers. And in my defense,
it sounds like
a soccer game. And I was like, Naruto is so popular. They've made like 5 Naruto games. I can't believe they haven't made a Naruto soccer game yet. Which I think was just me deciding that Naruto and Mario are the same franchise.
I mean, they might be. For all I know, they're the same.
Oh, Mario Strikers is the soccer game. It's a football game? It's a soccer game. It's a soccer game. Thank God. Okay.
What is Naruto if not the Mario of anime?
It's about a plumber. Anyway,
I'm now accepting pitches on how Naruto is the Mario of anime.
I will not be writing that one. I'll let someone else take the reins on it.
Okay, I'm gonna make the
sorry,
point.
Sorry for that Naruto interlude.
I'm gonna desperately claw my dignity back. Hey, did y'all know that the Nier games are about death? It's just about dying.
Someday I'll play them.
They're very pretentious, Missy. You truly don't have to.
I like pretentious shit, to be honest. Ooh. I couldn't get into Nier when I tried Automata, and I couldn't get into it. But also, you know, sometimes I'm not in the mood for the game that's in front of me. So
yeah,
it went back in the jar, and I'll try it someday when I pull it out of the jar, which is when I will finish. Wait, I will eventually pull something out of the jar when I fucking stop playing The Sims.
So, okay. The games are about death. This is... The Nier games have a lot of flaws, and I feel that I have to mention them, because I don't... I feel that they are not mentioned enough. Mm. And while I don't particularly feel the need to discuss them in depth, because the flaws seem obvious, I do feel I have to mention them, which is that Kaine's whole fucking ass is out all the time in this game. Like, that wouldn't necessarily be an issue inherently, except that there's no reason for it. It's just ass out. And sorry, it would be less frustrating if nobody commented on it. Because then it would just be like, okay, character design choices were made. I do not enjoy it, but I do accept it because I am playing video games and I know the world that I live in. It should be critiqued, but it's here. I'm just going to like move on. The book keeps calling her a hussy.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Why?
It does, yeah.
What, like, bro, you cannot address a character like this and then be like, well, that's a moral failing on her part. She's fictional.
You did this.
Weiss can't even wear clothes, so I don't think that's his place.
He's just
literally a floating book. Who's to say that if he couldn't get dressed that he wouldn't wear lingerie also?
I think he's jealous.
That's the secret.
Get that book a little skimpy outfit.
Get him underwear that just shows his whole barcode box. Yeah.
That's wild.
It's wild. I don't understand. And she's great. She is the most like foul-mouthed, aggressive, but like empathetic character in the game. I love her. And I wish I didn't have to stare at her whole ass all the time. Also, her top is like, you know, one of those like flowy top things, whatever, that like tastefully, quote unquote, tastefully reveals the boob. Only it reveals like the dead fucking center of her boob. And there is zero areola to be seen. Where are her nipples? Like... I don't understand.
She's a hussy, but not that big of a hussy.
As shown by her distinct lack of nipple.
Yeah.
It's not that she's carefully not shown it. It's that they should be there. It simply is not present. Anyway.
Is a feat of engineering.
Yeah.
Does it? Now I'm trying to remember because my only interaction with Nier Replicant is watching Maddie stream it. Is she the one that looks wildly out of place?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Like the core like group of Nier is like, a himbo Nier, Kaine, a mean floating book, and like this little haunted Victorian child who has a blindfold all the time. Emil has what I've started fondly referring to as like Fig and Ladyfinger McFlurry energy from that one, was it like a Clickhole article that was like,
yes,
McDonald's introducing a new Fig and Ladyfinger McFlurry for fancy little boys who desire a treat.
That's
and so now anytime I see like a fancy little boy, I'm just like, ah, that's Fig and Ladyfinger McFlurry energy right there.
Yeah, that's exactly Emil. And Kaine's relationship with Emil is like incredibly sweet and kind. And this is the thing that like delights me so much. I mean, the fact that Kaine cusses like a fucking sailor is what really delights me about her. But it's what like cemented her as like a character with depth for me, is that she's not just gonna be like aggressive actively to every single person she meets. And I like seeing that played out in an active character relationship, as opposed to just like told to me by off-screen actions that she supposedly took. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice. Her character design is a nightmare. They remade the game and they made the choice a second time.
It was like, really important that the book continued to be able to call her a hussy.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, Automata has similar problems. Like, when you run around as a character who similarly is just in her underwear the whole time, not to mention the outfit of 2B, which is, like, specifically designed for upskirt shots.
Yikes.
Anime was a mistake.
And you can also explode their pants off in Automata.
Yeah.
I don't even remember how to do it because I was like, obviously I'm not going to try and like, you know, damage myself. I do that well enough on my own. But you can like hold down two buttons and like self-destruct. And then when you get up again, your pants are gone. Like,
can you
just running around?
Can you
bodysuit thing?
Also do that as 9S.
Yeah.
I feel much better about this fact.
Yeah.
Opportunity, I think it's pants exploding.
9S. Is like you get a trophy for like exploding his pants, I think.
Great. I'm a little bit concerned about the joke that trophy makes, but we're just gonna soldier on ahead.
Deep Automata secrets. Explode pants.
Anyway.
I'm not in favor of the extremely wild character designs in terms of like all of the ass shots and like not just the ass shots, but like the aggressiveness.
It is pervasive. It's really.
But
I kind of
love the fact that they are so wildly pretentious and then just ass. Yeah. I kind of love the mixture.
Yoko Taro knows what he likes, and it's deep existential questions about the nature of autonomy and death, and also ass shots. And
at least he's honest.
Sometimes you can have two things, but should you? it's a little too honest. There's a whole thing with sibling codependency in his work too. It's like a whole, it's a whole situation. But I think that the games really are good at doing that examination of autonomy and like mortality. Like I really, really, really love those aspects of these games. Got it.
The way you said that was so close to dad ass.
I really like that these games are interested in not so much questions of like, are robots people, but rather, you know, what do you do with your humanity, or what do you do with your personhood, with your sapience, because it's not about humanity so much as like identity and self-awareness, when you have it and when it was given to you on under essentially false pretenses. And that's very much what Automata is about. And given what I know from Automata, I anticipate that we will be dealing with similar themes in Replicant. However, right now I'm mostly fishing.
How do you feel about the fishing?
I hate fishing in every game.
Fishing in Nier has been a real journey for me. I loathed it. I do still kind of hate it. It did start to click for me after like a certain point because I was fishing so much to do all the fishing side quests.
Yeah, I got used to it, but I played my first fishing minigame at the age of probably 8, maybe 7, in the form of the Big the Cat levels of Sonic Adventure. They are unplayable. And I have had a grudge ever since. It's been 20 years.
I love the idea of fishing in games. Like, it sounds so nice. It sounds like my shit. And I've never played a game that has fishing in it where I have not hated it with every fiber of my being. Like, I'm like, oh, fishing, that sounds so nice. No, it's not nice to me in video games.
Yeah.
I am enjoying.
I don't understand why there's such a fishing agenda in video games.
It is weird.
Big fish.
Big fish.
No, I do enjoy that. Like, people complain a lot about Nier Replicant being a very, very grindy game, which it is. But I'm kind of enjoying it because Final Fantasy X is also a really grindy game. But for most of that grinding, I'm sitting there trying not to check Twitter because I know that as soon as I open Twitter, it'll be time to press a button again. One button once. Whereas in Replicant, I can at least run around and like make the little teen jump around, climb a tower, kill a sheep.
Grinding in the I know the, what are they called, like the junk heap?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I could navigate the junk heap in my sleep.
Oh, the junk heap's a lot. Anyway, that's pretty much my Nier Automata take is that titty, too much titty. Also, not enough titty given anatomy. But
give the book a titty.
Give the book one titty. don't.
That's nightmare
fuel. I don't really want to think about the book having romantic or sexual relationships.
I can't imagine why.
He's a real jerk. Yeah, but basically my Nier take is like I feel a little bit weird sitting in on Yoko Taro's like fantasies. But and also I guess all the other character designers, I don't really know how that dev hierarchy works, but listen, I know too much about you. Whoever you are, I know too much. But I really do. Like, the reason I keep coming back to these games is the gameplay feels so good. And also, I really like the questions that these games ask and how they set them up. And the experience of having not just a story, but also a world and its history revealed to me over the course of, you know, 40-odd hours of play. They're just like very satisfying for my brain. I'm looking forward to finishing Replicant so Maddie and I can actually have a conversation about it.
I really want to try them. Oh, sorry. What was that, Maddie?
Oh, no. Sorry. I was just going to say I'll be awaiting your fishing takes eagerly.
It's boring.
It really does. The second half is kind of, is definitely wild.
Yeah.
It goes places.
I've seen some stuff.
I love young adult Nier's character design. I watched Mike play through the end of part one because my roommate is ahead of me. And I stuck around for like, we thought it was going to happen in like half an hour and instead it took two, but I sat there the whole time because I was like, I need to see him. I need to see my boy. And he looks so good.
It's such a good like redesign or like glow up, whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Those are my Nier takes.
I've been playing The Sims Cottage Living, but I'm going to let Zainab talk primarily about that because I already talked about cottage living on Fake Eat Girls. And you don't need to hear me gush about chickens forever. So I have not been playing much else, but here my husband has started playing Final Fantasy 14 again, which means that he's using the TV, so I can't use the TV to play The Sims. So I have started playing games that I can play in like bite-sized fashion. So games where I can play them for 15 to 20 minutes and then beat while he's finishing his dungeon, or whatever they're called, his duty in Final Fantasy 14. So I've been picking up some old games that I really like. Well, not really old, but you know, old
in the video game sense.
Hot takes on cool games. So I've been playing, I've once again ventured into Cook Serve Delicious 2, which I love so much. It's so stressful, but it's so soothing to me. I've been really stressed out over the past couple weeks for a variety of reasons. And whenever I'm stressed out and overwhelmed, it's Cook Serve Delicious time. Why? I don't know. I just, the stress... I guess because it encompasses every bit of my brain. I can't, if I'm playing Cook Serve Delicious, I am not talking. I am not thinking. I am focused entirely on serving these sad looking customers wildly complicated meals. There is nothing else. There's no room for anything else in my brain. I can't check my phone. I can't do anything. So it's great for that purpose. I love Cook Serve Delicious. I haven't played the new one yet. I did play it at like a preview of it at PAX probably in 2019. Might've been 2018, but, and it was pretty fun, but I haven't played it yet. So I'm still on that Cook Serve Delicious 2 life and it's still really fun. I still am unlocking restaurants. I still have like 3 restaurants to unlock. I still like it. It's still good, in my opinion. I've also picked up Hades again, because you can play it and like you can get through a run in, you know, less than a half hour, at least where I am in the game, which is like post game, haven't unlocked everything, but have unlocked enough things. God mode is on.
Yeah,
because I love myself. And
this is such an interesting. I'm sorry. This is like a rhetorical thing that I've been seeing with Hades is people talking about putting on God mode because they love themselves. And like, love yourself, put on God mode. Excellent. But I haven't, which is not a commentary on like getting good or whatever, but I like the fact that the game slams me into the floor more often than not. And so it's been really interesting to see this sort of specific rhetorical bent happening in gaming communities that I'm part of and not be part of it, because I'm not very good at video games, and I'm certainly not like somebody who's in the like get good camp of video games. I will not be playing Dark Souls, thank you very much. I would maybe play Dark Souls if there was a God mode. But it's just been so interesting because I think that Hades is like the specific style of gameplay that I'm maybe best at, not like necessarily good at, but best at, and something about the grind is so pleasing to me that I haven't felt the need to turn on God mode at all, whereas like literally everybody else I know has. And it's just it's been really wild to see the difference in what we are going to that game for, because I wouldn't have articulated it. I wouldn't have said that there was something different if I didn't know that pretty much everyone had God mode on. Or
I think the reason that God mode appeals to me in that game is because I hate dying to specifically the little the word is not coming to me except in World of Warcraft terms. I hate dying on trash.
Oh,
I
yeah,
hate to die
yeah.
on trash.
Yeah, little gremlins in the rooms.
Yeah, I don't like that. And I'm not very good at, I don't really care for roguelikes or roguelites. And so God mode is usually enough for me to ramp up the difficult things that I find fun. So like I just beat it with extremist measures. The one
Cool. Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So I'll ramp it up using the pact of punishment or whatever it is on the things that I find challenging in a fun way so that I don't die to trash, but that, I'm challenged by an additional boss level for Hades or whatever.
Yeah, that also does explain why everybody else has turned up their pact of punishment like way more than I have. I'm like, damn, I have like five on. How are you doing this?
I think the max I think the max I've done on pact of punishment is 10. But that was also with God mode on. I basically just wanted to, I wanted to play against Hades again because I thought there was more content if you beat Hades on extremist measures. Like I thought there was a additional scene or something, but I did it and there doesn't seem to be.
Okay, I don't know. I again have not gotten my pact of punishment up past 5. So I don't know. It's been like a fascinating discussion to watch because it hasn't even been a discussion. It's just like, oh yeah, use God mode if you want to use God mode. That's great. Carrying on. But I'm like always the person who turns on all of the help features in things like shooters because I'm so bad at them. and I don't find them enjoyable. And so it's been weird being on sort of like the other side of the difficulty table.
So when you're playing Hades, do you like just the basic flow of the game with the trash?
Yeah. I really do. It's great for me.
Yeah, I think for me, like, it's fine, but it feels a little repetitive after a while, and I hate Asphodel so much.
No, you do not have to justify God mode to me. it's been really weird to be in a different position with that kind of feature. And to see it, it's also been weird to see it so widely used and so publicly. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like people haven't had compunctions about using it, which is incredible. Like that's great. But it feels like it's been a new thing.
Yeah. I think this game's widespread appeal, including among people who don't normally play or at least like not publicly play a lot of video games. You know what I mean? Because like there's lots of people who play video games that don't really talk about video games, whereas I feel like there was a period of time when everybody was talking about Hades.
Yeah. Including us.
Including us. Including me on 2 different podcasts. I think that there's this one feels a little bit different because like if any From Software game had an easy mode, I feel like it would be. I mean, literally nobody can stop talking about what if it had an easy mode, Dark Souls or Bloodborne or whatever, which Bloodborne is in my game jar too. I'm gonna try it again someday, but I'm probably gonna hate it, but I want to try it.
I think I'm too mad about those games not having an easy mode, but that's definitely why I'm not playing them.
I love cosmic horror. I love gothic Victorian shit. I love those weird singing brain things. I wanna like it. I wanna like Blood. Like I'm like desperate to like Bloodborne, but I played it and died immediately and basically said, fuck this. I'm out.
Yeah, I can't even play Hollow Knight, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Games. Everybody out of God mode. Yeah, Hades is perfect for me sitting down for 20 to 30 minutes really, using my favorite weapon. I don't need to unlock all of these fancy statues or whatever. I'm just here to beat the shit out of Theseus. I have to, okay, I have to share this tidbit.
What is your favorite weapon? You're killing me.
The fists.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I like the fists. I was reminded of this yesterday for reasons I can't remember, but did you know that there is a Greek myth in which Theseus and some other person try to kidnap Persephone out of the underworld, and their punishment is that they get stuck to a rock, and Hercules comes and rescues Theseus, but in doing so he rips off his ass, and therefore Theseus's descendants were mocked for having a smooth ass.
Oh my god.
The Fake Geek Girls Hades podcast.
Okay, I wasn't...
The expanded version.
Theseus's flat-assed descendant.
Yes.
Everything that Yoko Taro hates.
I was just thinking about that again yesterday for reasons that I cannot remember. But yeah, Theseus has a flat ass, according to some Greek myths. And I love that. I hate Theseus. He's the worst.
My God.
So I take great joy in kicking Theseus's flat ass. And also Hades. Fuck that dude. Love the Furies. And I love Lerny, the Hydra.
Aww.
So happy that he's there having a great time. But yeah, Hades is it's so good to just pick up and play for a little bit and then put it down. I love that. My last game in this bite size genre or whatever.
Yeah. The genre of bite-sized wholesome games.
Yes, is Sayonara Wild Hearts, which I think is criminally underappreciated because I think it had the bad fortune of coming out the same day as Untitled Goose Game.
Yes, that is, I think that it came out at the same time as something. Yeah, and that's exactly what happened, is it just got buried.
Yeah, Sayonara Wild Hearts is so fucking fun. The music is so good. The design is gorgeous. It's wonderful to look at. And I don't want to spoil the ending or anything, but like the ending is, I'm like beaming as I'm playing through the ending. It's so cute and funny and like, I love it. If you're not familiar with Sayonara Wild Hearts, because it was wholly buried by Untitled Goose Game, it is a sort of not an endless runner. It's like a rhythm game in a way. you go fast on various vehicles. You play as a girl whose heart has been broken, and then it turns into a butterfly and goes out the window, narrated by Queen Latifah.
What?
Narrated by Queen Latifah?
Yeah.
How? Okay, I've read about this game. I've heard people talk about this game. Nobody mentioned that.
Mm. Yeah, Queen Latifah in Sayonara Wild Hearts is the sting of Where the Water Tastes Like Wine. Like, why?
Sting?
Sting? Sting is in Where the Water Tastes Like Wine. Yeah, he's the voice of the wolf.
Oh my god.
Yeah. These are true facts. It sounds like I'm making it up, but it's real. So in Sayonara Wild Hearts, you play as this, you go and you're chasing down your heart and things get really wild and kind of psychedelic, it has a banging soundtrack, and it's kind of about self-love and recovering from a loss, and then and you beat all of these really cool looking enemies, and then in the end you do something different, and I love it. I think it's great. It's so much fun. Again, the soundtrack, so good. I really like all of Simogo's games. They also did, every one of their games is pretty different. Well, this one's pretty different for sure, but they did Device 9, which is a really cool mobile game. They did Year Walk, which is, I love Year Walk so much. And they did, they've done a few others and they're not coming to mind at the moment, but I know they exist. And Sayonara Wild Hearts is just a really fun I don't really, how do you describe it? Like, it's kind of like a rhythm game because the music is like cues for when to press buttons. But it does, it feels a bit more like racing. Yeah. Yeah.
It's an endless runner, I think, but I don't know. I haven't played Sayonara Wild Hearts. People have described it as a rhythm game, which is the reason that I have not played this game, because I have no rhythm.
Yeah, a limited runner with rhythm. It's like, so there's like rhythm elements to it, but it doesn't feel like a rhythm game, and it's not punishing in that way. Like, because I like rhythm games generally speaking, but like if you fail in Sayonara Wild Hearts, it'll take you back like maybe 10 seconds.
Okay.
And then you get to try again. So it's not super punishing or anything, and that just means you get to hear the song a bit more. And yeah, I think it's super fun. I really like it. And I'm glad that I picked it up again, because again, it got super eclipsed by Untitled Goose Game, which I also really like. God knows I couldn't shut up about it.
You're the problem, Missy.
I am part of the problem. Yeah, it's super fun. It's really stylish. It's worth, like, I think at least just like look, like take a look at the video and look, see if that looks fun. Because I have a blast with it, and the levels are only like 3 minutes long. Because they're like the length of a song. So <Yeah. laughs> I could play a level and then be done with it for the day. I remember I bought it. Actually, I think it came out almost exactly 2 years ago from when we recorded. Or when we're recording today, because yes. I bought it. I once again was at the vet, stuck at the vet for hours. And I think I played the entirety of Sayonara Wild Hearts sitting at the vet office. Which was a great distraction.
And that's why it immediately left your brain, because anything done in a vet office didn't happen in real life.
That's true. My vet is always showing different pet themed movies.
Oh my gosh. I have watched bonkers.
I've watched Spirit, Stallion of the whatever, not the Silmarillion, that's Tolkien. I've watched that movie, I think I watched it two entire times in a like back to back at the vet. I can't tell you what happens in it except that there was a horse romance. I regret bringing this up. Anyway,
you're among friends here. They know your sordid past, but it's not part of our memes.
But yeah, Sayonara Wild Hearts, it's good, in my opinion. I really like it. Maddie or Zainab, do either of you want to go first, or do you want me to call on you, make it easy?
If Zainab wants to go first, I was just going to talk about Hades a little more. So,
I mean, I can call on Zainab and make it hard. By asking a question.
You can ask me a question.
Tell me about your experience playing Uncharted.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, big yikes. I recently got a PS4, so this is how I play games. Like, I'm very behind.
Oh yeah, so you'll fit in great.
Yes. And I was also given a copy of the remastered Uncharted trilogy. And I played the first one a bit on Xbox 360 a few years back and couldn't really get into it because it was a lot more shooty than I thought it would be. I thought it would be more like Tomb Raider or something. But I stuck with it. I think I played it on easy mode so that I could actually like win. I went into it knowing it's going to be colonial. I mean, anything that's like some like explorer, especially like a white Western explorer going off and trying to find treasure and stuff, is like, I'm braced for the colonialism, it's fine. But oh boy.
Yeah.
They really took it to a whole new level. Like, the first one was quite awful. as it was. And then the second one just amped up even more, and amped up in like throughout its own, like as a standalone game, even, you know, not even just in comparison with the first game. So I guess, like, as a sort of synopsis for anybody who, like me, hadn't come around to playing it, Uncharted 1, I can't remember exactly where it takes place now, but like,
it didn't matter. The game simply did not care.
That's basically it. It's an island. You know what I mean?
An island. Was it Madagascar? Maybe.
Who knows?
I Googled it. Hang on. No, hang on. Keep talking. This doesn't matter because it doesn't care.
The thing is, like, this is why it doesn't matter, because the second one also basically takes place, like, on an island, like, yeah. You know, or like the same general like landscape. You're in jungles and rainforests and you're surrounded by water. So I think the second game opens pretty much with you doing a heist on a museum in Istanbul, and it's to teach you the mechanics of a game, and you spend like a third of the mission in stealth and like knocking out guards as you come across them. And then all of a sudden you find you're given a weapon and you're asked to just shoot these, as far as I'm aware, unarmed brown guards just as you go through this heist. I was just like, cool. Yeah. We're starting off strong. And then after that you go to Borneo, and it all looks basically the same as the first game. And then you go to Nepal, the writers decided let's make a civil war happen and everything is destroyed. And it's like, oh yikes, cool. And then you go to Tibet and you get really injured. I mean, I guess this is spoilers, but like also.
Fine. If people are playing trash. Uncharted for like that part of the plot, I don't really know why they're playing Uncharted.
But yeah. And it's all tropes anyway, you know, like he gets really injured and then he's like rescued by this mystical like Himalayan guy. And then you wake up in this village and he's constantly making jokes about how no one speaks English. It's like, you are in a remote village in Tibet. Like, what?
Yeah.
What, no, what
Nate,
you
is,
exp-
Nate is shocked
that yes!
anybody could not be put on the earth to serve him and him alone.
It's so, and then in the village, oh my
and
god.
Also, and but yet these people were definitely put in this game to serve him and him alone.
literally, like, you find out there's like this guy and he's dressed up as like a guru type thing and like robes and beads, and he's a white guy. He's just living in this village. And then because of you being there, all the bad guys, who are at least in the second game white, although they're also Russians, they come in and they destroy this village and kill loads of people. And Nathan Drake does not care at all. No. Never comments on it. But there is a moment of like, there's a sympathetic death of the ex-Nazi who lives in this village that you found. And it's like, what the fuck is wrong with this game's politics? They really love Nazis. There's loads of Nazis in the first one as well. Like, in the first game, you find some Nazi corpse and Nathan Drake's like, poor guy. And I'm just like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, so the Uncharted games are a nightmare that has plagued me for many years. The reason that I'm curious about your experience is because you started with the first one. I'm frankly shocked you made it through the first one, because I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't get through the first one. But I started with 4.
Oh, I didn't know you started with 4.
Yeah, so what happened is I started with 4 and I enjoyed 4 because 4 has like Nate's, it's still, I mean, it's colonial. Every Uncharted game is going to be colonial.
Yes.
But instead of sending you to an island to shoot brown people, which is what 1 does, I don't remember if they were people who lived on the island or it just happened to be that all of the aggressors who you had to mow down in that game happened to have darker skin.
Yeah, they were hired by, like, the English evil guy. So conveniently, everyone you're killing until the end of the game is brown.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the whole game. Four, it's not that. It's, like, Scottish dudes. Like,
okay.
And they're presumably not all Scottish, but it's, like, it's definitely, like, a Western European, like, privatized military company or whatever PMC stands for, right? And so it's not that. And you're like gallivanting around Scotland for a while. And the gameplay is much better, which is to say they have much more enhanced difficulty features. So you don't really have to play the game, which I didn't really want to do. But I enjoyed the banter for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, I'm playing 4, I'm enjoying this, I kind of want to play the rest of the games, but I should probably play the early ones first, because the quality of life is only going down if we go into the path. And I went to 1, and I was like, okay, it's going to be really hard to play. And it was bad.
It was terrible.
I didn't enjoy playing that game. And I was on easy, and and on top of that, it was just, the abject racism of the protagonists versus the agent of players, or the agent of characters versus the people you were mowing down, made it truly unplayable.
Uncharted is fucking something else. And I say that as somebody who likes the series. I haven't played 1, 2, or 3 in years and years.
Yeah, but no, like, it was wild. Because 4 is not like a bastion of progressive ideals by any means.
No.
But I didn't realize how bad the series started. And it was maybe it was actually easier to get through as the first game because you weren't comparing it directly to the 4th in quite such
I played 2 first, and then I went back and played 1, and I was like, well, I don't need to do that again.
I'm just shocked that this game like became as famous as it did, and by you know what I mean by shocked.
Yeah, it's this Uncharted is such a weird fucking series. Like I said, I genuinely enjoyed playing all of them, even the first one. I don't, like I said, never need to do that again.
No.
But I didn't hate it while I was playing it. It's just kind of like, why would I play that one again when I could play 2 or 4 or Lost Legacy, which are just the same thing but done better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like I know I'm so sorry to dredge up the ancient discourse from beyond the dawn of time, but truly, now I've forgotten the word. The phrase,
I couldn't.
Ludonarrative dissonance.
Oh, God.
Sorry. I'm sorry. But, like, Uncharted was really, the series was really the focus of the discussion about ludonarrative dissonance, referring to the thing that the game tells you versus the thing that the game has you do. So Nathan Drake famously is a, like, quote-unquote likable asshole protagonist,
yes.
Right? Very Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it very much feels
Rick O'Connell.
Like... Okay, but Rick O'Connell's likable.
Yeah.
That's true. he's like in that vein. And I think he becomes more like Rick O'Connell as the series goes on. In the beginning, he just sucks ass.
Yes. No, and this is the thing. This is the thing that got me is I think he is at his most Rick O'Connell in 4.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. But, like, I understand why it was the focus of these discussions, because the game is like, no, he's great. You like him. You like him. Watch him murder and murder and murder and murder. And not just murder, but murder brown people forever. Just endless slaughter. It's like, I don't think that's necessary. And I don't even think it's in character.
Like, yeah. The character that he is in the dialogue, likable or not, is like...
It's so weird because in the first game, like, you So the brown people that you're killing are led by, I think it's Eddie Kang, Eddie something, who is hired by the evil British guy. And there's a cut scene where Eddie is talking to the British guy about how his men are getting slaughtered.
His name is Eddie Raja.
Me. Raja, so thank you.
Which is not better.
And so he's talking about, like, you know, my character is mowing down his men. So the game is acknowledging what's happening, but then it doesn't acknowledge it outside of that character making a remark,
yeah.
If that makes sense. So, like, Nathan never engages with this stuff. The reason why I'm not interested in playing anymore is because by the end of the second game, you know, you're coming into this lost city, and there's people there who start attacking you and the other people who are coming in, the Russians, because you're literally invading their city. So you're actively, like, performing colonialism in the most, like, blunt sense, right? Mm-hmm. And the game forces you to kill them. Like, it forces you to enact that. And I literally was feeling physically uncomfortable. I was like, mm-hmm. if the game had let me sort of essentially run through those levels and I didn't have to kill the people who live there and I was just killing the Russians or whatever, then I would be considering playing the third game. But because it forced me into that position and there's no acknowledgement whatsoever of how those people might feel, just like there wasn't any acknowledgement of all of the Tibetan villagers who were blown up and killed.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an acknowledgement about, like, all these white people who are dying and stuff. And, like, the bad guy in the second game says to Nathan Drake, you know, you've killed loads of people to get here. You know, you're just as bad as me or whatever. And it's just, like, it's such a weird sense of, like, the games do acknowledge what you're doing, but in such a limited way mm-hmm. that you, if you want to, you can totally gloss over it. And it's really confusing.
Yeah, and it's I played these games 3-4 years ago at this point, and I remember only bits and pieces. I remember the nausea of the first game. Like, the I gave that game like 8 chances, which I truly should not have, over the course of several hours.
It didn't deserve it.
It didn't deserve it. Well, the first time, excuse your motorcycle. The first time I had the thought, wow, this game is making me kill a lot of people and the shooting sucks, I should mm-hmm. stop playing. I should have stopped playing. But instead I was like, maybe this wave will be the last one.
I kept feeling that as well, because I kept thinking, and I definitely improved it in the second game, and I assume in the later games as well.
Yeah.
Because the first game, like, the controls are awful, even in the remastered version. Like, it was quite funny because I was like one of the worst, like, most incompetent colonizers in the world. Like, you're like running in,
most of
actively
them.
Destroying everything, and then jumping off cliffs
yeah.
by accident all of the time. But, like, I wasn't expecting it to be as much of a shooter as it.
Oh, and
the first
was.
One especially was. I was expecting more, like, puzzle set pieces and, like, platforming
yeah.
bits. Yeah.
The thing that gets me is, like, that's where the game is at its best. I don't know why they insist upon having shooting.
Yeah.
Like, why? But my favorite yeah. part of any of these games, I think, is in 4. Where there's, like, a big stunt that you're doing, essentially, off the side of a bridge, if I remember right. And you're, like, hanging from a rope and, like, running along the side of a truck. I could be totally misremembering that. Again, it's been a long time. But I was, like, I gasped when I was playing it because it was so stressful and so exciting. Why do you insist upon making me shoot? It's the shooting mechanics are not good. And then they decided to add in stealth. And it's like the game is not set up for stealth either. It's like you don't have any means of, like, diverting attention.
Yeah. This really interesting interview with a guy who plays shooters without guns. And apparently there is a way to play Uncharted without ever shooting a man. But God, at what cost?
Yeah, it is. There's something else.
It's really weird because I suppose I also just wonder, like, you know, and you know, maybe this is their way of trying to distinguish it from Tomb Raider, but like I sort of would assume that like most people aren't playing it to do loads of shooting; they're playing it to do the stunts and that sort of stuff, the quote unquote explorer stuff.
I think we might be wrong. I think people are playing it for the shooting.
They have, because I can't. Like, they have those multiplayer modes that are apparently popular.
I can't.
Oh, there's a multiplayer mode.
Oh my God. One, I can't imagine. But two,
it's
I
bad.
Can't imagine
I tried it.
That this game would have gotten as popular as it did on the merits of one if people weren't playing it as a shooter.
That's true.
Because
wild.
I think they should stop being cowards and give me the jumping puzzle bullshit I want.
Yeah. And there's something about the gameplay of Tomb Raider, the first Tomb Raider, the first reboot Tomb Raider specifically. Yeah. That's in that genre of games, right? Like it's like, you know, action adventure games, but very, very Western, as opposed to like action adventure JRPGs. Like those are different gameplay experiences. But there was something intoxicating about the gameplay in that Tomb Raider game, and I've been like chasing that ever since. And that's why I played so much Uncharted. But it's I find it very, very difficult to find games like that that aren't extremely deeply colonial, right? Like I don't have a huge interest in going back to Tomb Raider at this point. I find Uncharted fun, but the shooting is miserable and it's worse somehow.
Yes. It's because he deliberately wants to destroy things. Like, he doesn't even open doors. He'll shoot a lock and then kick the door open. And it's like, just use your hands, bro, please.
Yeah, no, it's Uncharted.
Yeah.
I've never played any of the Uncharted, but when you were describing Nathan Drake, I was like, oh, he sounds very Joel-like. Completely.
Yes, he's... Yeah.
Naughty Dog made both Uncharted and The Last of Us.
Yeah.
But, like, there are definitely some parallels.
Oh, you know what? I guess actually The Last of Us is the when I think of games with this style of gameplay, I think of Tomb Raider, I think of Uncharted, and I think of The Last of Us. And I guess The Last of Us is a game that maybe is colonial, but it's colonial. I haven't played it. I don't really know. It's not in the way that Tomb Raider and Uncharted are. You're not, like, going to the jungle to steal things.
And the second one.
You're not...
Oh my
God. Guess maybe you are.
Steal and murder, so...
But I fell off The Last of Us 1 after you do, like, kind of the first... There's maybe three acts of the game. I think in the first act, you meet this really cool woman... And it's just death flags all over the place for her. And boy, howdy, does she die. And then I turned the game off. I was like, we're done here. It's okay. I can do something else with my time. It's fine. We'll just do something else. I got right up until before she died. And then I looked it up. And it was like, she's going to die in the next 5 minutes. And I looked at my friend. And they looked at me. And we were like, we'll play Sonic again. Thanks.
I mean, this is a great segue to one of the other games I wanted to talk about, because colonialism is extremely prevalent everywhere, clearly, and I have accidentally done a bit of a colonialism video game tour, I guess, recently. Definitely not. I played Until Dawn, which is a game that I wanted to play since it came out, basically. Mm-hmm. It's... a PS4 game. It's a horror game that's sort of set up as like a slasher film, and it's got like, it's like one of them sort of cinematic games, a bit like Heavy Rain, any David Cage game, I guess. I mean, to be fair, better politics, but that's a low bar. So yeah, you like make decisions and things like that. And it's I mean, you play as a series of like there's a group of teenagers, and you take control of each one of them as the game progresses, sort of thing. They are incredibly incompetent. So it gets you in that like frustrated at teenagers in a slasher movie mindset, which is good. I played it with my partner, so it's a single player game, but like we were basically like making decisions together and stuff like that, and it was a really cool experience because I haven't done that anything like that in years probably.
Just to interrupt for a second, just out of curiosity, do you have the PlayStation camera?
I don't.
Oh, so there's a really fun mechanic in Until Dawn where if you have the PlayStation camera, it starts recording before a jump scare.
Oh my god!
And then it records your reaction to the jump scare and saves it on the PlayStation so you can go back and watch it.
That's really cool. I do like that.
It's so. I play it with my husband, or I haven't played it in years, but he holds the controller because I'm a notorious controller thrower.
And
I make the decisions. So like we have now all of these videos of us just like launching out of our seats at jump
scares. That's really good. How did you find the experience of playing it with another person like that?
It's fun for us because my husband prefers not to make decisions in games. And like I said, I'm not allowed to hold the controller. When it comes to horror games, I just throw whatever is in my hands away from me in the attempt, I guess, to get away from whatever's scary. So he holds the controller and presses the buttons, and then I'm like, okay, press X, press square, whatever. And it's really fun that way. And I think part of the fun with that is that it doesn't always work very well. Because sometimes you have to make split second decisions.
Yes. Yeah.
And then he's got to be like, what button's X? that's kind of fitting for a horror movie, is to have something go disastrously wrong because you made a mistake.
Yeah. We found that we ended up sort of, because quite rapidly, I'd say, we ended up not really liking any of the characters. Like, there were two characters that we liked, and so we wanted to do like the best for them, and then we played everyone else like in character essentially. So there's like this real like douche bro jock, and we would make decisions based on what would the sort of like babe guy do. You know what I mean? Like, he's not gonna, like, I think that at one point, like, his girlfriend, like, trips and falls, and you have the option of, like, helping her up or continuing running, and he's going to continue running. Like, that's, you know, an easy decision to make. And we were coming up with, like, theories of, like, what's going on. And to be honest, the only problem with that, which is something I don't usually do with anything, is because I found coming up with your own theories often will disappoint you. Like, often the actual thing is not going to live up to your expectations. And I think we came up with a much better plot. It takes a real left turn about two thirds of the way in. And that is the aspect, I think, of it that I really didn't enjoy, because I really liked, you know, I liked how it looked. So it's a bit clunky in terms of the controls, but like I like the mechanics, I like the setting, I like the idea, and the narrative was looking really interesting, and then just sort of I don't want to say it stopped being interesting, but it just took a real left turn, and that was just a bit disappointing, I think, because it's, you know, it was being set up in a specific grounded way, and it really pulled on a lot of indigenous imagery and stuff. So you know, there's like totems that you pick up that will show you, you know, potentially give you a bit of guidance in terms of like what decisions might lead to what consequences, that kind of thing. And in like one of the main characters' houses, like his family home, I guess, it's like, you know, dream catches up and like paintings of like Native Americans and stuff, and it's really uncomfortable to be completely honest. And I know, you know, I'm not Indigenous. There's, you know, sort of different opinions in terms of like the efficacy of the imagery that was used. While I was like sort of writing up my notes essentially on this game, I was trying to find out if the game was made with any kind of like Indigenous like sensitivity reading or input and stuff, and somebody on Reddit said it there was input from Cree community members, but I can't actually find that anywhere, so I don't know if that's true. But I think more importantly, like, the game itself did not feel very critical of like actual like settler colonialism, right? And so it's using certain tropes that some people have, Indigenous people have criticized as using particular imagery and particular narratives in a sort of, in a Western horror context, because the transference of those stories, as often happens, like, you know, whenever sort of a cultural touchstone or narrative is taken, you know, is transplanted essentially into another culture, a lot of the time a lot of meaning is lost mm-hmm. in that transference. And so without spoiling anything, the left turn basically entirely uses a particular Algonquin narrative, and you know, I can't comment on how well that's done outside of the broader narrative and it feeling really jarring in that sense. But like in terms of a sort of sensitivity or appropriation aspects of it, you know, some Indigenous people have criticized the use of that trope in horror. And I just felt like, you know, there are moments in the narrative where it seems like maybe the creators of the game were trying to comment on like the impact of settler colonialism in the area. But it didn't really feel like they were being very critical. And I sort of feel like if I can't tell with my incredible like fucking colonialism radar, then I don't think like white people who aren't looking for this sort of stuff would be able to tell either. And it, yeah, I think it just sort of really, and also there were definitely like, you can pick up notes and stuff as you go through the game, and I'm pretty like 99% sure I picked up a note because I remember getting angry at it. So I'm pretty sure it was basically saying that all of the local Indigenous community just, it doesn't exist anymore, which is like a really harmful myth, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you're including that in the game, then like any attempts at criticism is gonna fall flat. A criticism of colonialism is gonna fall flat because you've already established something that's just not true, and is right. actively harmful.
It's like it's not outrage. Bait is also not the wrong word. Or not the right word. Wow, I'm doing great.
It's okay.
it's like sympathy baiting.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes.
Where
yeah.
we're sort of manufacturing a tragedy. We being white people mostly, but but more generally like out group storytellers.
Mm. Yeah.
Or storytellers from a group with a history of oppression, like mm-hmm. that we're doing the oppressing, we're doing the colonizing, mm-hmm. Where, you know, we revise narratives such that they are over.
Yeah.
So we can say we did a bad thing in the past, but now we can do good things, as yeah. opposed to framing tragedy and cruelty as ongoing and yeah. and kind of maybe not owning, but acknowledging the fact that the effects are still causing harm.
Exactly. And actually, I read this, I think it was somebody's dissertation. Maybe we could include a link or something
in the
show notes in case people are interested, because it's really interesting. I've written my name down. Hopefully I can pronounce it correctly. Nathan Legace, or I don't know if that's correct.
It depends.
It could be Legacy, I guess.
Yeah.
They wrote about, they were arguing, and it's, you know, I think there's a way of reading this game generously, I would argue, that as trying to show those effects, right, those ongoing effects of settler mm-hmm. colonialism, there's, you know, some subplots that you can sort of associate with. There's a subplot involving some miners, and you can definitely read it as, you know, linking a tragedy involving some settler miners with the violence of settling that land in the first place, and that initial violence results in further tragedy. Unfortunately, you can also read it though as that horror trope of the Native American curse, right? You know, Pet Sematary, that kind of thing, which is super duper problematic. So, you know, there are different ways of reading it. I do think, to be honest, I really, really doubt that the game writers really put that much thought into it, to be completely honest. And I think, nonetheless, Nathan Legace, I believe, in the dissertation writes, you know, that there's still a sort of, instead of seeing these effects of settler colonialism as systemic, essentially tying it to specific individuals, the people who bought the land, the people who set up the mines poorly, this sort of thing, rather than seeing it as a systemic issue that still hasn't been dismantled, kind of thing. And I will also add, because it's horror, I really love horror, but like it's, you know, a bucket of shit, let's be honest, you know. You know, there's also terrible mental illness representation in this game, which also mm-hmm. comes out of the blue a bit, and it's a bit like, didn't need that, really didn't need that, this could have been avoided. It's really bad. But you know, it's a game with Rami Malek in it, and we like Rami Malek.
That was the first way I was introduced to Rami Malek, and now forever he will be the character from Until Dawn to me.
That's amazing. I had a lot of fun playing it until towards the end, and you know, I unfortunately, like, these issues are not, you know, they are an issue within all of pop culture, but mm-hmm. also specifically within horror as well. These tropes are done and overused, and they have not been, I don't think, adequately interrogated, really. And so you kind of have to brace yourself, I think, going into any horror media whatsoever, you know, always check the content warnings and brace yourself for some bad, ill thought out stuff. But yeah, I did enjoy playing the game, but it was a bit disappointing, I think, in the end.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. The animations, the facial animations. Some of it's like quite impressive. Like, I think when they're not moving their faces, it's quite impressive. And then there's like these interim bits with this like psychiatric doctor, and he just gurns the entire time. He's just like chomping on his tongue, and like, it's
if
so
you haven't
weird.
Seen this, I'm gonna look up a video and I will share with everybody, because it's the funniest fucking so thing. I think it happens on pause menus too.
Yeah.
It's oh just no.
Wild.
It's yes.
My fiance has been wanting to play this game with me for like a couple years now, because he knows that I'm a huge weenie as far as horror is concerned. Like, I was at the dentist last week, and, like, the dentist already freaks me out, so I was, like,
oh, no.
Sitting there in the chair, and then he comes around the chair, which is, like, you know, not facing the rest of the office, and I startled, like, that's how bad I am with, like, any sort of, like, unanticipated, like, visual or whatever. Mm-hmm. I completely forgot where I was going with that. I'm so sorry.
Were you gonna play it?
Yeah. I don't know, but, like, now I kind of want to. Oh, that's what made me think of it. Like, I want to see whatever this weird, like, facial thing is, because I do think that would make me laugh a lot.
I think it's worth it for that alone, to be completely honest. Because it happens so often as well. It's like, all of the characters do it, but, like, the Doctor is the worst one, and he just crops up occasionally, and every time he crops up, it's like, oh, he's gurning again, don't worry. He's just staring at you and gurning.
God, I'm playing this. I'm gonna hope that it doesn't crash my whole computer.
I'm watching this video as you're talking, and I'm just losing it. It's so funny. There are certain things where it's like, I understand that this is, like, you know, people move their mouths and their eyes and make weird faces, like, just in idleness. But there are some things that we don't need represented realistically. It's just too much. Oh, God, it's so funny, though. If you ever, like, when you're playing Until Dawn and things get a little too stressful, just, like, hit the pause menu and watch their faces.
I think every time someone's face moved a bit weird, we were both like, what year was this made in again? It made me, I kept thinking it's, like, from 2007 or something, but it's from 2015.
Yeah. In some senses, it's really impressive, but then yeah. It's like, you can stop being impressive now. I don't need this.
It's, like, really high res.
It's so petite.
It's like beautifully rendered for 2007. I wonder how they did this.
Oh, God, it's so funny.
Why are they rocking so much?
They're scared, Zora. They're so scared.
I don't like it. We also gotta put this in the show notes. Hold on, I'm gonna copy it. It's important.
Oh boy, I gotta finish this game sometime.
So yes, that was my colonialism tour of video games recently. I'm hoping that the next game I play won't have colonialism in it, although the next one I'm thinking of playing is Spider-Man on PS4, and I know that that's pretty colonial in terms of especially cop stuff, so maybe it's just unavoidable. But I also played a bit of The Sims 4. I haven't played it in a couple of weeks, but like Melissa, I wanted to get chickens and do some farming.
It's so cute. You can hug them.
Yes, you can make friends with them.
They're so cute. It's so cute when you hug the chickens.
I like that you can play with them. And like, I've got a little, I built like a sort of witchy house and have it on like an island in one of the worlds. And I've set up lot traits that essentially bring all of the stray cats and dogs to my garden.
Yes.
And it's so good. It's just, I'm working on befriending one particular dog so that I can adopt them, because they got really angry with my sim. They were like, I hate you. I'm really angry for no reason. I was like, I need to befriend you and adopt you so I can take care of you and you'll never be angry again.
Is that with the pets expansion?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have the pets one. I have, like, I think city living, cottage living.
These are good choices.
The occult pack.
Yes.
And I think one other one. And I live in a haunted house and it sucks.
Yes, I've heard. I've watched, like, loads of Sims Let's Plays, and I'm not going near the haunted house.
It's so hard.
It just looks like a nightmare.
It's really hard. If you want a difficulty spike in The Sims, get the cult stuff pack and live in a haunted house. Oh, your Sims will never sleep.
I'm so sorry that I just laughed directly into the microphone. I wasn't ready.
They are. My Sims are, and I have like 8 Sims in a house because I'm like, I want to control, like, I want the, you know, I have different aspirations. I want them all.
Yeah.
To be, because if I send them off on their own, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
But the problem is that all night long, they are being woken up by strange noises. They are running around screaming at each other. And then they don't sleep all night. Oh, so they're exhausted. They're not able to take care of my cow or the chickens.
No!
Or the garden.
And it's the ghosts, like, break loads of stuff, don't they?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's even better.
How?
And, like, I have a question. It's a bit of a tangent. How aggressively would you have to hack The Sims to have chickens in the city living?
You'd have to have outdoor. And the thing in city living is that you live in apartments.
Right. This is why the question.
But I wonder if I demolished one of the parks and I set up a community garden and farm, would it work?
You got to report back.
I'm going to finish The Sims when I have built the dream house, which I'm almost done with. I will leave The Sims cottage living behind. But now I gotta know, can I make a community garden and chickens and cows and so on?
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry to have sabotaged you in this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Also,
God, I gotta know.
I haven't played city living, but like, can you have balconies in apartments?
None of the apartments I have had a balcony, but I'm always, I don't like to cheat with money. I only like to cheat with where I can place various objects so that I live in an adorable house.
Yes.
So I'm not, I have never lived in any of the fancy apartments because I usually get bored before I make enough money to move to a fancy apartment. Cottage living has really done a lot to keep me invested for more than 2 weeks. Because I'm really devoted to chickens.
That's because chickens are the best.
It's true. They're so cute. They're so cute. Yeah. Cottage living really, really came for me.
Maddie, do you wanna take us back to... or do we have more things to say about The Sims cottage living? I'm sorry.
I think it's cute. And it's the best, pretty much sums it up, I think.
Excellent.
And then eventually, you know, and this is something that, so I started playing The Sims 4 again while I was finishing my dissertation because I was like, I need to procrastinate somehow sometimes. And I didn't want to play a game with like an actual story. I wanted something I could sort of dip in and out of. And I found that like, I used to be like quite badly addicted to The Sims like several years ago. And I'm not getting that this time around. I, as I said, haven't played it in a couple of weeks. I think there is a sense of like, because you have to set your own goals, right? So like eventually you're going to meet your goals, and move on with your life, I think.
Until that's what I'm hoping sets another anyway. Goal for you.
Until you get the community farm. Yes.
That's all right. I can find out relatively quickly if it'll work.
True. And if it doesn't, you're free.
I really hope it works, though. Not because I want you to be trapped, but because I think that would be incredible for, like, everyone who plays The Sims.
Yeah, I gotta know.
Maddie, do you want to bring us back to Hades and then on to other indie darlings?
Sure. So I've been, like, actually really struggling with playing video games this year. In the sense that,
I can't imagine why.
I know. The wedding, the pandemic, a variety of reasons. But mostly I've been finding that like my attention span is just not there.
Mm-hmm.
And especially lately, I guess just because I'm like busy. I've been looking for games that have a very low startup cost for me, in the sense that, like, I don't have to learn new mechanics or, you know, learn the characters, or even just, like, decide whether I actually like the game itself. So I've gotten back into Hades. I think Hades and this other roguelike called Going Under came out, like, at the exact same time. I bought them both. And I was like, I'm going to become a roguelike person. And that didn't happen, like, at all. I played Going Under a lot because it was shorter. It was like, a bit simpler. Like, I don't know. I was a little not resentful, but, like, just not super into, like, following the Hades hype, I guess. So I played Going Under first, and I played, like, a little bit of Hades. And then this, like, past, I guess, couple months, I was like, okay, I'm just gonna hop back into it. And I don't even know what I think I started streaming it when I started streaming again. And then that sort of got me back into it. And I have started to embrace, like, easy mode. Not that, like, how do I say it? It's not that I am resentful of easy mode, or, like, I just don't use it very often, probably because of some internalized, like, gamer thing, you know, about difficulty. But I really want a boyfriend in Hades. and I think the fastest way for me to achieve that is to use God mode. And so I've maxed out God mode. I'm well on my way to romance. And I'm just really enjoying that. It, like Melissa said, it's a game that you can do in sort of, like, a bite-size spot of time, so I'll just, like, play a run or two before bed. I do still have to smash every pot in every chamber, so it does take me a full hour to do a run. And I do also do, like, the weapons with the plus 20%, because I do want the fancy statues and all the paintings and stuff, so it does take me a really long time to play a single run. But I've also been enjoying I played We Know the Devil recently, and by recently I mean on Wednesday and also this morning. It's about three teens at a Christian summer camp, sort of like a magical realism. Okay.
This is not the game I thought it was. Keep going.
Situation. Yeah, it's a visual novel. It's very short. There's only, I think, about seven choices that you have to make. And so you play, the three main characters are Jupiter, Neptune, and Venus. And so you play through their relationship over a single night. And it's got magical realist elements, but it's more about, like, their relationships and how they relate to each other. And I think, you know, they're, like, disagreements and, you know, things like that. It's really well done. I really enjoyed it.
I love that. I love that. And I need to replay it.
It's so good. It's so good. I really want to go through and play, because there's multiple endings. So I want to go back and play through the true ending, which I did not get. But
is this the game?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was so, like, such a feat for, like, how simple the mechanics and everything were, but it's so creative. And, like, the story that it's able to tell in about an hour, I really enjoyed it.
Is this the game that's also, that's by
AVB and
Mia Schwartz.
Mia Schwartz, thank you. Yeah.
But also, was it all? Did they also do one where you are in mechs in space?
Yes.
Okay. Heaven will be mine.
Worst girl games.
Okay, okay, okay. I was ready for you to talk about Heaven Will Be Mine. And then you said, kids at a Christian summer camp. And I was like, what? Okay.
Same people, different game.
Great.
Yeah.
Sorry about the
next
sirens,
time, maybe
if it's
next
coming.
Time I'll talk about Heaven Will Be Mine, because I have not yet played that, but it's been on my laptop for...
Yeah, I'm a goblin, and if a visual novel can't be played on the Switch, I can't play it. I don't
know
why.
We know the devil is available for Switch. I've got a code if you want to play it, Zora.
Do I? I presumably have to review it. should I do that? Okay, yeah, no, send me the code. I'll do this.
Okay, I think we have a review of it on the site.
Oh, okay.
From when it first came out,
I'm gonna use the code. I'll think of something to write for it.
The code is just sitting in my Twitter messages, so.
Oh my god.
Not being used.
Right. Excellent. Great. Give me that. Because I just, okay. It's based, because of how my attention span works, something I can't, for some reason, if I try to play a visual novel on my computer, I get distracted and I don't finish it. I played maybe a half hour of Heaven Will Be Mine and I enjoyed it. And then I never played it again.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way, especially when my fiance is playing a game on the television. I like to be able to play something in handheld mode, or else yeah. I'll just sit on my laptop and do nothing productive yeah. or valuable with my time. So, like, the Switch has been such a, probably my favorite console this year, because it's, like, perfect for those shorter games.
Yeah, no, it's because I can take the Switch and I can put it in handheld mode and I can lie in my bed without my phone or my computer and thus without Twitter. I can actually like focus on things that require a lot of reading. And I don't want to do it on the TV because like Mike might want to use the TV. Also, I like feeling intimate with stories. It's too far away from me if it's on the TV. Anyway. I'm excited to play this game.
It's really good. I've also, another sort of easy to play in small doses game, I was playing Overboard recently, which is by the same, by Inkle Studios, who did 80 Days.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
And Heaven's Vault.
Yes, and Heaven's Vault. It is like a roguelike visual novel almost, and I said earlier I'm not a roguelike person, but I guess like I'm not doing anything for that brand. But it's really good because it starts with a murder and then you have to get away with it, and it's really quick. Like you have 8 hours and you essentially have to set yourself up, and you know, with evidence, etc., like all the clues, like you have to set it up so there are no like loose ends or like any ways that you can be convicted of the murder. So basically you're just workshopping the perfect crime in each run, and each run you learn things that will help you get away with it. And so Anthony, my fiance, got that for me for my birthday, and we played a bunch of it and it was a really good time, especially because we kind of, it's not really a co-op game, but you know, Zane was saying earlier, we, you know, we're trading off on making decisions and controls and stuff, which is very enjoyable.
I love that.
Yeah, and I think the last game that I've been playing lately, especially now that I've been seeing friends better or more, you know, more often and safely, we've been playing this game called Burgle Bros for tabletop. And it's a card game, and you set up like a 4x4 room of tiles, and then you have to get away with a heist. So it's like a co-op sort of Ocean's Eleven type deal.
Okay.
It's tons of fun if you haven't played it.
I have not played it. I just Googled it. I want to play it.
It's that really good.
Yeah, that's
Zora,
really
we should
good.
Play it sometime.
I was about to say, I'm about to invite myself to your house.
Please do. We will make you pizza. Like, it'll be a good
excellent.
Time.
God, this looks really fun. Also, pizza
it's
is
a lot
delicious.
The design is, like, really good, too.
Yeah, so for people who are listening to this audio medium, it looks like you basically set up a tile grid with these cards, and there's many other items that I don't know what you use them for, and it looks like a heist movie. Like visually it's got that sort of like 60s flat aesthetic. There's tiles that look very much like blueprints. Presumably there's a lot of counters that mean things. I don't know what they mean. But it looks like it's got a real sweet spot of like complexity and simplicity.
It is. And I think because it's co-op, it makes it easier to learn the more complex
mm-hmm.
things, because you're not trying to like strategize against a bunch of other players and also like make sure you're playing by the rules at the same time. My
mm-hmm.
friend who was sort of like guiding us through this game made it like a really good experience, because he put on like heist music in the background and was like, okay, here's how this is gonna work, and then he's like, here's what the rules say, but here's how I play it. So I think it was like a really good spot of like you know, you can bend the rules a little bit and just make it about as fun as like you want it to be, which is, I think, as fun as possible. But yeah, it's a really, really enjoyable experience. And it's not a super long game. The goal, essentially, you have to crack a safe on every floor. So you can set up one floor, you can set up two floors, or I think up to three floors. Yeah, and escape the guards, open the safe, and then move on up to the top of the building and helicopter out of it or whatever.
But the blueprints are just the backs of the cards. That's very cool. That's a great design choice.
Yeah, so then you flip them over and you don't know what's going to be in the next tile.
Man, I've been watching Leverage, too.
Zora's in the headspace.
I'm ready.
Burgle Bros.
I love the name.
I know, it's so good. They have a couple other ones, and I'd be curious to try them. And I think one of them is like a novel writing. It's about writing or something. And I forget what the other board games that they have are. But I actually found this, like the game itself at this really cool board game cafe in New York.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was really neat. We walked in and there were a bunch of people playing like tabletop games and they have coffee and stuff. And I was like, hey, do you have Virgil Bros? And they were like, let us check the basement. And that's the history.
Do you know what the name of the cafe was? Because, like, I live in New York City.
I will look it up for
you. Cool. Great. Thank you. We got friends who we could take there.
Yeah.
People are traveling again, and so...
I'm coming.
Yo!
I'm coming in November.
Yeah, Maddie. Let me know.
It's called the board game cafe is called the Uncommons.
Uncommons.
Near Washington Square Park.
Oh, cool.
I will also theoretically be in New York in November.
Yes. Theoretically.
Theoretically. Before I have to leave to get married.
Oh, I see, I see.
That's important.
Yeah, you know.
I was like, you live in Jersey. So.
I do, yeah.
All right, does anybody have anything else?
No.
No.
Incredible. Well, this has been great. Thank you to Zainab and Maddie for joining us. And we'll be seeing you again in the future. I've taken over the outro, so Missy, if you want to, if you would like your job back.
Yeah, thanks for joining us for another post game. Again, big thank you to Maddie and Zainab for joining us. Naseem will return. look out. Again, I'm Melissa, SideQuest editor-in-chief. You can find me on the internet, regrettably. I'm on Twitter at Melissa Brinks. I'm on Instagram at Melissa K Brinks because somebody took Melissa Brinks. Also, I'm going to I have a short story in the upcoming Proxicism anthology, which will be on Kickstarter, I believe, when this comes out. My short story is about fungus and capitalism. It's like really my first good.
It's
thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you. It's one of my first horror stories I've ever written. So if you're interested in reading that, please back the Kickstarter. There's a lot of really great work in it, and I'm very excited about it.
Oh, right. Me. I was like thinking about short stories. the concept. So I have been Zora. I am on Twitter at ZH Gilbert. I'm going to do it every time to make you laugh.
I'm such an easy mark. I laugh at everything.
I'm reading Haikyuu, but I'm live blogging it on my private Twitter because I didn't want to engage with anime people on public. You should join our Discord, which there's a link to it in the Patreon page. It's chill. Come talk to us about Hades or truly all of the other things that we play.
Chickens.
I mean, and hell, come talk to me about Haikyuu. I'll talk to you about Haikyuu.
I'm Zainab, and you can find me on Twitter at Zainab Hull. And I don't think I have anything to plug at the moment because I'm a bum who is recovering from doing bad dissertation.
Are you like done with your dissertation?
Yes.
With the writing, I guess. I know there's a lot of steps.
Yeah, but I am anticipating admin difficulties
oh no
in November when results come out, but I am done.
Well, congratulations on being done. And best of luck with the administration.
Thanks.
That is an achievement, even if you still have some. That's a big achievement.
Only took 3 years.
That feels normal. I mean, I don't know. I haven't done a doctorate or any sort of dissertation, but 3 years feels normal.
I know nothing. I'm just impressed that people do this.
Thanks.
It's a long time. It's hard. I did not do a PhD. I looked it right in the eye and went, nope.
Yes. Well, this is my master's, and having done this, I'm like, I cannot do a PhD probably ever, but definitely not for
You've looked a PhD more directly in the eye than I
have. Yes. I've gone right up to it and I've been like, no.
I guess that's actually what I did, is I did look a master's program right in the eye, because I looked at the PhD and went, and then I looked at a master's program that was conducted a lot like a doctoral program, which is to say, much more focused on like research and practicum than classes. And I also went, nope.
Nope. I would say that is the correct decision to make.
Well, congratulations regardless.
Thank you.
When I did a master's degree, like, way back in the day, like 3 years ago or whatever, and I did find a way, this is relevant, I did find a way to write about Nier Automata.
Oh my god!
I did a whole presentation on the philosophy, like on the philosophers that are mentioned in Nier Automata.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I love this.
Oh, just had to shoehorn that in.
Yeah, that's
amazing. Please, at all times.
All right, Maddie, can people find you somewhere on the internet?
Nebulously, I exist on the internet. Yes, I'm Maddie Butler. I am on Twitter at Madison R. Butler, because Maddie Butler was taken.
These people.
I'm still resentful over. But I'm on Instagram at Maddie Butler, which is M-A-D-D-I. And then Butler, you know, like the job. but yeah, and I don't really have anything to plug right now. So, but this has been very lovely.
It has been.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining our editorial team. Thank you for listening. Those of you who did not join our editorial team and are not appearing on this episode. So that's it. Go take a nap.
I am ready to begin.
Cool.
Yes, I'm ready.
The recording has begun. I always have to do like a big sigh beforehand. I get so stressed starting a podcast. Yeah.
This is I feel the benefit to the clap method, because it's like you know, in improv games or theater things. I don't know why I know this.
Are you the only theater person here?
I'm not a theater person. Theater keeps happening to me.
Editor.
Theater keeps occurring adjacent to me, and I learn. but no, there's often like warm ups, right? And to get everybody kind of in sync. And so that's has always seemed to me to be the benefit of the clap in podcasts, is because it sort of forces everybody to share attention on one thing and then do a group action. I'm so sorry.
I appreciate the insight. Does that mean you all clap at the same time?
In improv.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
But the clap for audio is just like to make everybody clap at the same time to be able to line up the audio.
Oh, I see.
Which is not necessary for Zencastr, because it does it for us.
Okay. I've learned so much.
Is so much smaller than everyone else.
Oh, no. That's yours actually is, because you are quiet. But something about Zencastr, I just popped really loud, sorry. Something about Zencastr means that your line,
like my line from my on my screen is teeny tiny compared to everybody else's, and I don't know why.
Okay. Zencastr is not a perfect platform. But having done some others, all right, are we ready?
Yes.
Okay. Podcast face on.